Welcome to another edition of The Worth Report. We begin this week's show with a crash course in economics.
The Industrial Revolution created a lot of inequality between countries, but today globalization and international trade are accelerating it. Most economists agree that globalization has helped the world's poorest people, but it's also helped the rich a lot more. Harvard economist Richard Freeman noted, "The triumph of globalization and market capitalism has improved living standards for billions, while concentrating billions among the few." So it's kind of a mixed bag. The very poor are doing a little better, but the very rich are now a lot richer than everybody else. There are other reasons inequality is growing. Economists point to something called skill bias technological change. The jobs created in modernized economies are more technology-based, generally requiring new skills. Workers that have the education and skills to do those jobs thrive, while others are left behind. So in a way, technology has become a complement for skilled workers, but a replacement for many unskilled workers. The end result is an ever-widening gap between not just the poor and the rich, but also the poor and the working class. As economies develop and as manufacturing jobs move overseas, low-skill, low-pay, and high skill, high pay work are the only jobs left. People with few skills fall behind in terms of income. In the last 30 years in the U.S., the number of college-educated people living in poverty has doubled from 3% to 6%. Which is bad. And then consider that during the same period of time, the number of people living in poverty with a high school degree has risen from 6% to a whopping 22%. Over the last 50 years, the salary of college graduates has continued to grow, while after adjusting for inflation, high school graduates' incomes have actually dropped. It's a good reason to stay in school. There are other reasons the income gap is widening. The reduced influence of unions, tax policies that favor the wealthy, and the fact that somehow it's okay for CEOs to make salaries many, many times greater than those of their employees. Also, race and gender and other forms of inequality can exacerbate income inequality.
Now, for 2010, the U.S. Census Bureau found that the poorest 20% of Americans made 3.3% of the income, and the richest 20% made over 50% of the income, so that's pretty unequal. But has it always been like this? Well, in 1970, the bottom group earned 4.1% of the income, and the top earned 43.3%. By 1990, things were even less equal, so the 2010 numbers are just a continuation of the trend. And it isn't just the poorest group that's losing ground. Over those 40 years, each of the bottom groups, or 80% of households, earned smaller and smaller shares of the total income. Now, from the Lorenz curve, we can calculate the most commonly used measure of income inequality, the Gini index. Now, without jumping into too much of the math, it's basically the size of the gap between the equal distribution of income and the actual distribution. Now, 0 represents complete equality, and 100 represents complete inequality. Now, you might be surprised to learn the U.S. doesn't have the highest income inequality, but it does have the highest among Western industrialized nations. The U.K. has the highest in the EU.
The debate over income inequality isn't about whether it exists. It obviously does. The fight is over whether it's a problem and what should be done about it. Let's start with those who don't think it's a big deal. They'd tell you that the data suggests that the rich are getting richer and the poor are getting poorer, but that might not be the case. Instead, it could be that all the groups are making more money, but the richest share is just growing faster. Like, let's say you own an apple tree and we pick 10 apples. You keep 6 and give me 4. A week later, we pick 20 apples. You take 15 and give me 5. So my share of the total went down from 40% to 25%, but each of us still got more apples. So it's true that people in the lowest income bracket have earned a little more money in the last 40 years. But in the last 20 years, that average income has been falling. Meanwhile, the rich have continually gotten richer. So what's the richest guy on earth have to say about it? Bill Gates said, yes, some level of inequality is built into capitalism. It's inherent to the system. The question is, what level of inequality is acceptable? And when does inequality start doing more harm than good? There's a growing group of economists who believe income inequality in the U.S. today is doing more harm. They argue that greater income inequality is associated with a lot of problems. They point to studies that show countries with more inequality have more violence, drug abuse, and incarcerations. Income inequality also dilutes political equality, since the rich have a disproportionate say in what policies move forward, and the rich have an incentive to promote policies that benefit the rich. So how do we address this inequality? There's not a lot of agreement on this. Some argue that education is the key to reducing the gap. Basically, workers with more and better education tend to have the skills that earn higher income. Some economists push for an increased minimum wage, which we're going to talk about in another episode. There's even an argument that access to affordable, high-quality childcare would go a long way. And some think government should do more to provide a social safety net, focus on getting more people to work, and adjust the tax code to redistribute income.
Some economists call for the government to increase income taxes and capital gains taxes on the rich. Income taxes in the U.S. are already somewhat progressive, which means that there are tax brackets that require the rich to pay a higher percent of income. Right now, it peaks at around 40%. But some economists call for increases up to 50 or 60%. One idea is to fix loopholes that the rich use to avoid paying taxes. Other economists argue that taxing the rich won't be as effective as reducing regulation and bureaucratic red tape. It's unclear which path we're going to take, but extreme income inequality at the national and global level needs to be addressed. Motivation to improve income inequality may come from a genuine desire to help people and level the playing field, or the fear of Hunger Games-style social upheaval. But either way, the issue can't be ignored.
Even Adam Smith, the most classical of classical economists, said no society can surely be flourishing and happy, of which the far greater part of the members are poor and miserable.
Now, with this week's edition of The Worth Report, here are your hosts, Nick Wharton and Glenn Wright.
Good Saturday, and welcome to The Worth Report. I'm your host, Nick Wharton, here with Glenn Wright, founder and president of Worth Financial. Each week, we'll bring you news that you can immediately use to manage your financial planning and offer commentary on local, national, global events that affect your ability to sustain your financial future. Glenn, we're here again this weekend. How you doing?
Doing great, Nick. How about yourself?
I'm doing super, man. Here we are again.
I know. We are we're focusing on this wealth inequality. We're hearing it in the news. We're hearing it everywhere. You got athletes getting upset about it. I mean, you know, making stances. I mean, this is really a hot topic, but no, it's like with, what's the quarterback's name? Colin Kaepernick.
Oh, yes, right.
Yeah, you aren't hearing a lot of solutions. You're just hearing that there's a problem. So luckily that our listeners are here to listen to the show today so they can get solutions to what these issues. I mean, certainly these issues aren't going away.
Right.
So we're going to have to do something about it. So we've been getting so much positive feedback on the last couple of shows. We're just going to keep on giving more stats and giving more answers. So, man, I'm excited to be here with you this morning.
Yeah, I am too. You know, there's no question that America's rich are getting richer. But according to a Congressional Budget Office, right, Americans age 65 and older are the only group that grew the median wealth between 1989 and 2013. Right?
Wow.
And during that same period, the median family wealth for households headed by someone of that age group increased 67%. It's interesting. That's one group that's getting wealthier, but there are also groups that aren't.
Okay.
Right? So how do you respond to this aging population that, why is that actually? Why is it you got this aging population that seems to be getting wealthier?
Well, because they were able to truly live the American dream. And we tell our listeners, and I tell my clients that you have three options: you, the government, and yourself. And 30, 40 years ago, everybody was rolling. Everyone was working hard. The government's working hard. The employers wanted to make sure that everything was taken care of and provided for. Well, we found that that wasn't quite sustainable. So what we found is a lot of those benefits have gone away. So that's why when you look at the generations after this group of people,
right,
then the numbers are quite staggering because they're quite different from their fathers.
Well, that's true, because it looks like the median wealth, according to the same report, the median wealth for people between the ages of 50 and 64 declined by 15%. While those between the ages of 35 and 49 saw their median wealth drop 40%.
40%.
$58,000. And those under the age of 25 saw their median wealth drop around 23% to a mere $10,000.
Yep.
So
well,
what a picture that's painting of the American dream.
I know. So one area is growing and the other one's diminishing by far. And there are multiple reasons why this is the case. So the first one.
Give us the top two. What do you think?
Well, the first reason is actually looking at the employer. Pensions have gone away. Pensions are huge. You typically, if you look at someone who may make $50,000, $60,000, you know, I grew up in Detroit, and you look at their pension on top of having 401k benefits, those numbers were tremendous. Where now an employer may give $3,000 to $4,000 to someone in that case, through their pension, they may have given $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, almost double their income. So the employer is saving a ton of money by not having to put all that money into a pension plan. So that is a huge part of the wealth. Retirement planning or retirement accounts in particular are huge accounts for this particular group. So if your employer isn't adding money, and some employers don't even have retirement plans anymore, then you take that piece away, then you're going to see a big drop. Medical benefits also, because of the cost of health insurance, the average cost of a bankruptcy is $12,000.
Wow.
The number one reason, or one of the top reasons, it was a few years ago, medical costs, because they can't afford it because they have bad coverage, bad insurance, or no insurance at all. So it causes for bankruptcy. That's another reason. So now you have to go down that journey of starting all the way over. That would be another reason versus people in this age group of 65 and older have typically had great benefits, either if it's from the government or if it's from their employer. So those would probably
and
be
state and
two of the top reasons.
Oh. State jobs.
Absolutely.
Impressive retirement packages. In fact, they've moved to states that have a much more favorable tax environment. Many New Yorkers have come to North Carolina, particularly because of the tax environment.
Oh, absolutely.
And they've done quite well.
And South Carolina, because even better.
And South Carolina,
that's true.
So here you have this this amazing wealth gap between generational wealth gap. But then you have the wealth of the top 10% of earners that grew 54% between 1989 and 2013 in comparison to the rest of the population. So I guess
54%.
That's probably obvious, right? You know, the rich get richer, but those top 10% earners, their increases, their wealth has grown 54% more than the rest of the population.
Well, the several reasons why, Nick, that this has happened. One is, if you look at one of the major reasons for decline is not just the employer, but also real estate is a major way of building wealth and has been for many, many years. So with the economic decline, then people were unfortunately in a situation where they had to do the opposite of investing 101. Investing 101 simply says this: buy low, sell high. Buy low, sell high, right? So what does that mean? That means when the market is down and the market is bad, that's when you want to buy. However, if all of your wealth was placed in your house and now you can't afford to stay in the house, what happens? They're going to kick you out the house. Who's going to buy the house? Someone who has the wealth, someone who saved and planned,
right,
and maybe they've done the right things financially. Maybe it could have been inherited. Who knows? But now they have the money. So now they're buying it low, because the bank is going to sell that property at a lower value than probably even what the mortgage has. It's called short selling, foreclosure, etc. So they're buying low, then they're going to wait until the market comes back. Like in Charlotte, the market's heating up, the real estate market. So then you sell now. So they bought low, they sell high. Unfortunately, for the people in this range, many people overbought. They had bad loans, so for many reasons why they weren't able to keep their homes. But because of that, that's why we saw such a huge decline. People didn't put money into the retirement funds; they put money there. And what I've also found, and I've met with so many people, is people use their retirement plans to be their savings. Your retirement plan is not your savings. It is there for what it's called for, which is your actual retirement. So if you are under 59 and a half, there should be, hopefully, no reason for you to pull money out of your retirement in order to pay off a bill or use it for some quote unquote emergency. It's there for your retirement, because if you pull that money out, then you have to pay penalties, taxes, fees, etc. So you may end up paying 30, 40, 50% on that money to pull it out. So your retirement plan is certainly not a savings plan. So it's important. That's why it's important to make sure that we save and invest, so when opportunity knocks, you can take advantage of it. The top 10% were able to do so. That's why they have so much more wealth than the masses. So it's important that, again, we plan, save, and wait for the opportunity. It's going to happen again in real estate. Real estate, just like any market, doesn't go up all the time and never comes down. It's cyclical, just like the stock market. So it's important to make sure that you save, and you might not make much in your savings right now, but you wait for the right opportunity, and it could be a game changer. Go look at the Grosvenors, which we talked about last week in our show. They took advantage of the opportunity when William the Conqueror came, and what is it, $12 billion later, and 1,000 years later, they still have this wealth. Well, you can do it too. You can be the Gilbert Grosvenor of your family. You can make those changes.
Well, you know, this is, I mean, I hear you saying it. You know, one of the realities, though, is that you'd have to be obviously in control of not only your own financial status, but the financial status of the government. Because they were able to, over so many years, create and manage, you know, public policy that kept them in a position, you know, of incredible wealth. And that's just, I guess, another chapter of how we have to manage. Because a lot of wealthy people do a lot of stupid stuff,
yeah,
you know?
That's true. Well, you can't control certain things, but that's
right.
Why you put trust and things. There are things and mechanisms you can put in place. If you have someone who's not going to be a good steward, and you know that child isn't going to be a good steward over their finances, put a trust in place where they have no control over it, and hopefully two or three generations down the line, somebody will get it right.
Wouldn't that be something?
You know? Yeah, you can do that.
Wouldn't that be something?
But
that'd be wise.
Now, you might not have to be worth $12.8 billion, but you could take your family from a negative net worth to something positive.
There's no question.
You know?
There's no question.
So it just takes some planning. So you could be that person, that linchpin that can start the process to build the wealth for your family. One being making sure that you save, making sure you buy real estate right. Real estate is an investment. It's a place that you live. You want to enjoy it, but don't overpay for a home. You want to make sure that you buy the right home, one you can be comfortable in, but it is an investment. So making sure that you buy the right real estate. Mm-hmm. Don't buy something just to buy it. This is say, now I own a home.
Right.
And you buy it for $100,000 and then $100,000, and then 3 years from now it's worth $50,000.
That's right.
That's just not a good deal.
So I'm hearing you saying you got to diversify your investments.
Oh.
Certainly insurance products is one.
Yeah.
But there are other tools you mentioned as well.
Yeah. Yeah. So another issue that we've talked about on the show outside of real estate that's also affected the generations below the age group of 65, the baby boomers, will be student loans.
Yes.
You know, now.
Wow.
College, I mean, it costs $1 million to go to college now. It's crazy. So because of that, and it's not changing anytime soon. So since it's not changing, again, we have to save. Your child may or may not need to go to certain schools. If they're not going to.
Or may not get into certain schools.
Well, that's one.
So you need to kind of manage your stress around all of those issues.
Well, that's one. But even if they can get in, can you truly afford to go to that school? And unfortunately, that's just the world we live in.
That's right.
Right? Because that can limit. You say, well, this school can actually help me and broadening my horizons and opening up doors. It can also, if you can't afford to go to that school, it can also keep some doors closed. So, and who wants to be a slave to any loan?
Yeah.
So we have to certainly watch student loans. Student loans have been a big reason why this has changed. And then the next one, and I go back, we talked about the pensions. The next one would be employers. I think about jobs growing up in Detroit. General Motors, Ford, Chrysler. These were jobs that were highly prized, where friends of mine who I went to school with, they actually knew when they graduated from high school, they were going to go work on the line. And they were going to work overtime, and they, and in 2 or 3 years, they'd be making $80,000, $90,000, $125,000 at 23, 24 years old.
And they were, right?
They were making coin. However, those jobs are now non-existent. Those jobs are in Mexico and in China and they're in India, and they're only paying pennies on the dollar. So those jobs no longer exist. That really helped in manufacturing, really helped the middle class, not just from the income earned, but from good health care benefits as well as pension benefits that could ultimately lead to higher net worth. So even if you made poor decisions, like many of the baby boomers did, they spent a lot of this money. But because of the benefits, they were able to still attain and keep a great amount. So you're looking at your parents who may be spending more money than what they need to. My father drives a Lexus. My mother drives a Acura. And we live in this McMansion. But they have pension plans. They had a fallback even to the things that they've done wrong financially. So you're learning from them. So you don't have those same safety nets. And we want, and you hope that they leave an inheritance to you. But even before that, because your foundation now is going to be different for the people who are not in that baby boomer generation, then you're going to have to save more, invest more, and make much wiser decisions. You don't need that huge home, especially early on. You need to make sure you have your emergency reserve, which we say now is 6 to 12 months living expenses saved. So if you spend $5,000 a month, you need to have $60,000 saved in an emergency reserve, not an account where you're going to get in and out of and touch all the time. But that's there. You're only going to crack that glass open if there's a true emergency and you need it. So if you don't have those things in place, then as a foundation, if you don't have life insurance because you love somebody, if you don't have the emergency reserve, if you haven't paid off your credit cards, why would you buy a huge home and you have a lot of credit card debt? Let's work to get that paid off first before you buy a home. And if you can't do that, then you don't need to buy the house, because even if your mortgage is going to be the same price as your rental payment, there are a lot more expenses that go into buying a house. One, the house is probably bigger. Utilities are more. Are you going to cut the grass? Probably not. So you got to pay for lawn care. You got to pay for if anything breaks in the apartment complex, they come fix it.
That's right.
But now the toilet breaks, it's on you. So you got to have money that's there. So, and then now you bought this new beautiful home that you're in. You don't want the same furniture. You want to buy some new paintings and pictures and drapes and all these things. I'm having flashback. Wait a minute. But,
right, exactly.
But anyway,
sounds like a conversation at home.
Yeah. So you want to make sure that you want to definitely make sure that you have money for those things, and you don't dip into your emergency reserve to in order to do that.
Yeah, that makes wise counsel.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah,
that's
that
it.
Makes wise counsel.
So
huh?
So you look at, again, the government has made changes. Employers have made changes. So those are the reasons why that the generations are so different. Then you look at the real estate markets. And then finally, I would say the stock market as well.
Yes.
Again, the goal, ladies and gentlemen, is to buy low and sell high. That's how you make money in everything. So especially real estate and especially the stock market. If you don't save money and the stock market collapses, the stock goes down. It happens all the time where stocks are undervalued. If you don't save, then you won't have money to put there when the opportunity presents themselves. So part of saving these reserves is to take advantage of that situation. Imagine, I talked about this in The Financial Shepherd, which is a book that I co-wrote. And I talked about our clients buying Fifth Third stock at $1.10 a share.
Wow.
Right? In 2009. And 6 months later, sold it at $8.50 a share. So if you had $10,000 invested, you'd have almost $85,000. $100,000 invested,
wow.
$800,000. Why? Because we knew the underlying assets there. Fifth Third actually had a processing unit, which they still own part of. It's their crown jewel. They were able to sell part of it, which I figured they would. And it was almost a no-brainer. And it worked out. So those opportunities present themselves only if you save and if you plan and put yourself in the right position and talk to the right people, too. But if you don't do anything, you're just living day to day, check by check to check, hoping for the best, it's never going to happen for you. In fact, it's going to get worse for you. So that's why we have this show. That's why you and I are here, to make sure that we can talk and share what's going on, to hopefully get an urge to somebody. Let me go pick up a book. Let me go look at the internet. Let me start checking some of these things out so I can make a difference in the life of myself, my family, and the people in my community.
Well, I'm glad you said that, because I've gotten some good comments from listeners about information they've learned about real estate, about their personal finances, about this notion of financial infidelity and how that plays out in their lives. And the topics that we've, I think, tackled have had immediate impact on those that have listened. And I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, I do. I certainly agree. I think, again, the wealth gap is not changing. I know we're in a political cycle right now, but nothing's going to happen over the next couple of years. Nothing dramatic. So what it takes,
right?
Trump, Clinton, doesn't matter. What matters primarily is going to be you saving money. Even if you don't see a way, $5 or $10, you sacrifice somewhere, put some money up where you can save some money in order to have money for a rainy day. And that rainy day is the opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Lord presents those opportunities when you are ready for them. And if you can prepare yourself and get ready for them, then it will happen. So save.
Don't get distracted. Don't get distracted by the politics of the day.
Oh, that's it. That's it. Don't get distracted by the politics. Don't get distracted by what other people are doing wrong. If you have a coworker and you know your income is the exact same, and your spouses, or if you have a spouse, is the exact, you know, similar income, why do they have more than you? Forget about it. Who cares, right? You don't know what their parents have or what was saved, what was passed down to them. You need to be the best steward over what you have. Keep trying to keep up with the Joneses. Make sure that you save accordingly. And so now your kids, your children's children can have more, because that's going to be the difference. Is what you do today is what's going to make the difference. You can't rely on anybody else to do it. It's not going to happen. You have to do it for yourself.
There you have it. You got to do it for yourself. Thanks, Glenn.
Pleasure's mine.
All right.
This has been The Worth Report with your host, Nick Wharton and Glenn Wright. To learn more about Worth Financial and to speak to one of their advisors, call 704-731-0121. That's 704-731-0121. Or log on to worthadvisors.com. That's worthadvisors.com.